Yeah. So how long have you owned your own business for, Tim?
Oh man, long time. So I, well, when I first got out of college, I actually got involved in wholesale distribution. My dad had been a manufacturer's rep for a long time, so he was selling consumer electronics, home theater equipment, distributed audio, all that kind of stuff. And he was a rep. He had started a distribution company about a year before and had no full-time employees. So, I was like, I have no idea what the hell I'm going to do. I'm a math major. Let me help you out for the summer and I'll figure out what I'm going to do. And at the end of the summer, I was like, I don't want to do anything else. I love this. This is freaking awesome. So, fortunately, he agreed to have me stay on. And I worked with my dad for over 10 years. We grew the distribution company grew at 60% a year on average. And then we sold it. And then I stayed on for a while. I ended up getting laid in 2009, early 2009. I ended up getting laid off from the company that bought us.
All right. Okay.
And then I was in real estate, residential real estate for a while. I was a real estate broker, or real estate agent, I should say. Did not like it, hated it. And that's when I transitioned into marketing. And I've been in marketing since 2013-ish.
Oh, wow. Okay.
So it's been a while. It took me a while to find what I really enjoy and what I'm great at in marketing. So I'm not going to say it was a straight path. It took me a while to really figure that out. But I've figured that out and I
It's
stay
such
in
a
my lane.
broad topic, marketing, isn't it? It
It is.
covers
It
so
is.
many different things. So, well,
Yeah.
so that's like what, 11, 12 years now then you've been doing marketing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yes.
You can probably teach me a thing or two.
Man, I learn new things every freaking day. Every
It's always, changing, isn't it?
It's always changing and you're never done learning. One of the people that I really respected early on in my professional career said, the day I stop learning is the day I die. And that always resonated with me. So I'm very much a lifelong learner, whether it's professionally or personally, and I just enjoy that. So, with marketing, I'm never done. What I will say is a lot of the things that I focus on within marketing are more fundamental. So they're not changing, right? The fundamentals and disciplines don't change. The fundamentals of standing up to, the plate and hitting a major league fastball are the same as they were when you stood up to in little league. And, the fundamentals of marketing, of sales, of running a business, man, they're the same. They don't change. The tactics,
The mediums that change, isn't it?
Exactly. The tactics, the marketing channels, those are constantly evolving, but the fundamentals of marketing, they don't change. They're immutable.
Yeah, we went through like a big change there the weekend almost where was it like TikTok was banned. I don't know if you have any of your clients have a presence there, but there's tens, thousands, hundreds of thousands of people that rely on that for an income, and then it changes overnight. So
Well, so okay. I mean, since we're talking about this, we might as well touch on it because it's super important. When you look at things like TikTok or any other social media channel, that's a rented marketing channel. You don't own that. I mean, as we saw with TikTok, I mean, there are influencers that if all of their business is on TikTok, they could be in serious trouble. There's nothing wrong with using rented marketing channels. We have to realize that they're rented and things can shift. And from a strategic perspective, I believe we want to leverage rented channels and drive them to channels that we own, right? So, a lot of what you're doing, right? Paid ads, again, rented channel, but paid ads that drive people to opt-ins that then go to your email list. Well, you own your email list. So once they're on your list, that's a medium that you have far more control over. And to me, that's what you want to do. You can use rented channels, but drive them to channels that you want.
Yeah, I love that. Owned versus rented. And I was, you know, back in 2012, 2011, I had one golden channel, which was Google at the time. They had an algorithm update. It totally wiped me out. I was ranking really high the search engines for certain terms, and I just got completely wiped out. And that was where I learned that lesson where you need to have ownership of you know, your, and the cool thing about it as well is you're building an asset in the business. So if you're building that list and you're building that audience over time, it's an asset that you can leverage. I have heard though, like, you know, if you're building a list, you know, you might think that you own that list sitting in a CRM somewhere, but you should actually be backing that up as well, because I have heard of certain people,
yes,
where they're, you know, they've maybe done something against the T&Cs, or
yeah,
maybe they just, the way that they come across, they have maybe some sort of expression or political view, that account can get closed down. So
I mean, yes, thank you for bringing that up. So like with my email list, I back mine up every like three months ish. You know, it kind of depends on how many people you have coming onto your list, right? If you have a lot of people coming onto your list daily, weekly, you probably want to back it up more than that. Yeah. But you know, any email marketing software worth its weight is going to have an export function, and you just go in there and export it to a, you know, a CSV file, and there you go. You've got it. And so if you do, you're absolutely right. The software itself, you are renting, but the list you own, as long as you make sure you back it up. So back it up. And if something happens to that account, you can always take that list and go to another email marketing software, and you're up and running quickly.
Yeah. So this kind of, you know, this is obviously a revenue area for our audience here at IT Rockstars, or managed IT service providers. And yeah, I bet there's a really small fraction that are backing up their clients' email marketing platform, backing up that list. So that's a little tip right here. So we touch on MSPs, and we kind of arranged this meet. I had a podcast with you earlier in the week where it was amazing the types of questions you came to me with, and it was all very organized, where we had this nice little list. I don't have that. I've literally got three questions on my list for you. So we're just seeing where the conversation goes more than anything.
Awesome. I love it, man.
So what, you know, one of the items here is, what do you think from an MSP's perspective are the core components of building a marketing engine?
Yeah. So here's how I think about it. And this is all that we do, is focus on helping MSPs build their engine. So when I look at the three core components of a marketing engine, I think of strategy first, then planning, and then leadership. You have to have all of those in alignment if you want to have an engine that's operating efficiently. So when I think of strategy, I think of strategy like the fuel for the engine. When we go into planning, we're looking at picking the parts and assembling the engine itself. And then leadership is the mechanic. You got to have a mechanic maintaining that engine so that it operates efficiently and smoothly. And a marketing engine is not like a Honda or a Toyota. It's, you don't just put gas in it and it just runs maintenance free, you know, for days on end. Yeah. It is more like a race car engine, right? It is highly optimized, and you're constantly tweaking it, fine tuning it to make sure that it's running as efficiently as possible. So we have to have all three of those components in place.
Okay.
Now, within each of those three components, there are three subcomponents that I look at. When you look at strategy, and by the way, there's nine total components we look at. Any one of those is a revenue roadblock. If you have neglected that, it is going to impede your revenue at some point.
Okay.
So when we look at strategy, I look at three things. First is your target market. Who are your ideal clients? Who are you going to serve?
Yeah.
Everything from a marketing standpoint is built from that. So if you don't have a clear understanding of them, you're you're already off the rails.
So I have this conversation quite a lot with MSPs, and they kind of, you know, they'll tell me, oh, we'll just service everyone, Tim. We, you know, it doesn't really matter. We haven't really, some of our clients are in this industry and some are in this industry. Some feedback, it's like, yeah, we'll just take anyone. How do we get around that conversation?
Clients? Yeah. Yes. So there's multiple ways around it, because you're right, Scott. Most MSPs are absolutely terrified to focus on like one specific industry vertical. And frankly, look, there are multiple ways to target, right? You don't have to necessarily target on industry vertical. I just think for MSPs, it is the simplest way to specialize in niche. So that's what I recommend. You don't have to, you know, jump in with both feet, right? What you can do is, and here's where we typically start. Who are you currently working with? Like, don't reinvent the wheel. Look at your existing client base. Yeah. And who do you love working with? Who's profitable? And who are you getting great results and outcomes for? Ask yourself those three questions. I call them the three power questions. Ask yourself those three questions of your existing client base and see what comes to the surface. And then you can start to look at it. So it's not uncommon for us to go through this process and they're like, oh man, I have like, whatever, four clients or five clients, or, you know, a majority of my clients are in one or two industry verticals. Okay, great. You love working with them. They're profitable and you're getting great outcomes for them. So if you work with more of those people, you're going to be happier. Your team's going to be happier. You're going to be making money because they're profitable, and they're going to, retention is going to be high, and they're going to want to refer you because you're getting great results for them. So what we can do from there is you can target your marketing activities to one of those two. You have to target your marketing activities in some way, shape, or form, because you can't, when you target broad, your message is broad and it doesn't resonate.
Yeah.
Right? You can't
Is this the second piece in our strategy? There goes my balloons.
Yeah, nice. Is messaging. Yes.
Okay.
Right? So we can't create a strong message until we know who we're going to target.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It's impossible. And so we got to know who we're going to target. Then we can craft our message. And MSPs really struggle with their message. If you go to five MSP websites, four or five of them say basically the same flavor.
Yeah, same thing.
Message. Yeah. And there's no differentiation. And when we don't have differentiation, what happens? People default to price because they have nothing else to compare you on.
Yeah.
And competing on price is a whole place to be.
Mm-hmm.
So with target market, who are we going to target? Then we can craft a message. Right.
And can you get that messaging one? Can you like give me an example?
I'm gonna share a tip here.
Okay.
When we look at our messaging, we want our messaging to focus on the problems our ideal clients have and don't want, and the results they want and don't have.
Okay.
So the problems they have and don't want, and the results they want and don't have. They don't care about us. And a lot of MSPs talk about themselves. The clients don't give a crap.
So how do we make how do we make that specific to a specific target market? So that's probably I'm looking for like an example, like a real world example.
Yeah. Okay. So let me give you I'll try and break this down, and I'm going to give you guys an example outside of the MSP space.
Okay. Cool.
Because I think we're too close to this. Right. So think about, we worked with this was a while ago. This is probably 5 or 6 years ago. I worked with the residential siding contractor. So they did home siding, roofing, and the contracting industry is very similar to the MSP space. Like, you go to 5 contractor websites, again, they say the same thing. Like, number one roofer in Denver. Like, who cares? And how do you even prove that? Mm-hmm. So when we started working with this client, we looked at their Google reviews and what people were saying. And there was a woman in there who said, man, the thing I loved about these guys is they treated my house like it was their own.
Okay.
That is a differentiating message right there. Because that's when you talk about, you know, quality IT, you know, response times, take your pick. Like, it's table stakes. Like, they expect you to know what you're doing. That's not something that differentiates you.
Yeah.
Right.
That's just given, isn't it? So, yeah.
It's a given. Yeah. Right. Still, when you talk about that, it doesn't differentiate you. But think about if you needed a new roof and you went to 5 websites and 4 of them are like, number one roofing in Denver, high quality roofing and siding. And one of them said, we'll treat your home like it's our own.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. How does that make you feel? You're like, oh my gosh, they're going to put on boots when they come into my house. They're going to clean up roofing nails. Like, if you've had a roof replaced recently, roofing nails, they leave that stuff all over the place. It is in your yard and you will be fixing them for years.
That's not too great where it's in the driveway or when you're
exactly
running barefoot through a sprinkler or something like that. The kids are,
So, you know, when they're treating your house like it's their own, they're taking the time to do it right. They're going to leave it like they found it.
It's almost like that becomes
a differentiating message.
That example, there's almost like it's a hidden benefit. It's not like one that, you know, would immediately stand out if I were to go to ChatGPT and ask, give me the benefits of having a roofer to replace my roof. It's like one of these hidden ones that just wouldn't be aware of. So I look at looking at the Google reviews for ideas.
Mm-hmm. And you don't, that's why part of, one of the things we recommend when you're doing strategy work is interviewing your clients, because our message needs to be in their words, right?
Yeah.
That's another challenge MSPs have with their messaging is they tend to get very technical, right? Because they're technical people.
Yep.
But a lot of your buyers are not technical. I mean, if you're working with if your target is, you know, CIOs or CTOs, well, that's a different story, right? But most of the time they're working directly with the business owner who's not technical. So if your messaging is at a level 10, you're losing people. You need to drop it down to a 2 or a 3 so that they can understand what you're trying to communicate. But the other thing too is most people they're not buying IT for IT's sake. They are buying IT to support a larger business objective.
Yeah.
And so we need to understand that business objective because that's really what they're buying. They're not buying IT. They're buying what IT can do for them.
It's how it assists them to get to their goal, what their goal is.
Exactly. Yeah. So we need to understand that part of it. But when you talk to clients or you look at reviews, you'll see what they care about. You'll understand the problems that you're solving and the business outcomes that you're helping them achieve. But it's, you know, that example of, you know, we'll leave your house, treat your house like it's our own. That is a core promise. And that's a unique selling proposition that they're putting out there. And it's a promise that they're making to clients that immediately differentiates them. And that's what we want to have happen. Mm-hmm. It's a simple message. It's easy to understand and it grabs their attention so that they then want to learn more. And that's what we need to do with our message.
Yeah. And I see that all the time on MSP websites. It's like, this is great stuff, Tim, because it's always like the ones that I always see are like, our staff are amazing, or we're really fast at fixing your problems. You know, whilst they sound great, they're actually really generic. That's what everyone's saying, as you say. So it's, you're dialing into the detail, interviewing your clients, you know, turn on the AI note taker. So you can go through AI. So I love that. So we've got target market. We've got messaging. What's the third thing in the strategy?
Then we have our services and our offers, right?
Okay.
So we need to, and you know, I think you need to go crazy with this on the MSP side of things, but you just want to make sure that are our services structured and positioned in a way that our ideal clients actually want to buy them. So for example, a lot of MSPs price per seat. Is that how your ideal clients really want to buy? That's not a question I can answer. You need to understand your ideal clients. A lot of MSPs have longer term contracts And I understand why they do it. But do your ideal clients really want to sign a 2 or 3 year agreement? Mm-hmm. Probably not. So, you know, those are some of the things that we want to look at when we're looking at how are we packaging our services, and are they packaged in a way, one, that helps differentiate us, but two, is a way that people want to buy. Because if it's a way that they want to buy, it's and to actually make that decision.
So that example there of, you know, the length of the contract, and this is going to, you know, we're having this marketing discussion about how we're packaging our services. Would you, that specific example, would you be having that like on public display, the length of the contract? Would that be actually like one of the service pages on the website would actually have a piece of copy that's going into detail on how long our contracts are, or the fact that don't have contracts? Or is this when we get down to the quoting of the services?
No, you actually could do that, right? So if the way your services are structured is different, I believe you absolutely want to highlight that on your website, because that becomes a differentiator, right? So if look, I work with a few MSPs that don't have any long-term contracts. It's all month to month. And people probably think that, you know, some MSPs may go, dude, that's freaking crazy. But guess what? They're willing to do it. They're willing to do something that a lot of other MSPs aren't. And so they can, that's a differentiator, right? So on their website, they can talk about, hey, all of our work is month to month, right? We're not holding you hostage. We feel so confident in our ability to serve your needs. We don't need to tie you to a long-term contract.
It's getting much more difficult to offer that. Give you a good example of Microsoft.
It is.
Their licensing is now structured. The risk's all on the MSP. So it's amazing that people are still offering that though. So yeah, I can see why you would have that on your website.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
But and that's the other, on the flip side, right? The downside to a longer term contract is you may be tied into pricing. What happens if, you know, we've been in an inflationary market for a while now.
Yeah.
If you're in a 3 year agreement and all of a sudden your pricing went up 20% or 30%, you got problems, right?
So that's a benefit to having a longer term contract. It's funny we're talking about this because I was looking at my annual mortgage statement today, before this call. And here in the UK, we don't have like 30 year fixed term mortgages.
Okay.
It's just not a thing. It's like every 2 or 5 years. I'm like, oh,
it's
no.
Adjusting.
So I've got a little surprise. In a couple of years' time, so I totally see the benefit of like a 3 or 5 year contract for an MSP. You know, that's how I would sell it anyway. Cool. So our services and our packaging, how we communicate that in our marketing.
Yeah.
Are we going on to the planning stage now, Tim?
Yeah. Yeah. So we talked about the strategy, which is fuel.
Yeah.
Now it's planning, right? And I would say this is where most MSPs tend to jump to. Is the planning side of it. They start picking parts or marketing tactics.
Mm-hmm.
I need to do paid ads, or I need to create content, or I need to have a website.
Yeah, tactical.
You do need to do these things, but until you have the fuel, like you can build an engine, but if you have no fuel, it's not going to do anything, which is why a lot of MSPs struggle with marketing. They're like, man, I've done this marketing thing. It doesn't work, you know, or it didn't work for me. Well, that's because things were out of alignment or they were out of sequence, right? When you do things in your marketing journey is just as important as what you do. And so if we skip the fuel and just start building the engine, we're going to have problems, right? But that's what we're doing in the planning phase. And with planning, we look at 3 things. We look at lead gen, right? How are you going to generate leads? Lead conversion, whereas what are you going to do to nurture those leads, because not every lead that comes in is ready to buy.
Yeah.
And what's our sales process? How do we have a process to convert those leads?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Then we look at retention and referrals.
Okay.
You know, retention referrals are super important. A lot of MSPs are generating a significant portion of their revenue through referrals.
Yeah. Yeah,
so
I speak to that's like how they built their business.
Exactly. But I'll tell you one thing. I ask most MSPs that come into my world, I ask, okay, this is great. You're most of your business coming from referral. How are you doing that? Or does it just happen? The majority of the time, the answer is it just happens.
It just happens. Yeah.
And so there's opportunities there to optimize that process. And when we look at retention and referrals, that's one of the first things that we do is like, what is your referral system? Are you asking for referrals? You know, what are you doing to help retain clients? Mm-hmm. So that's what we're looking at with planning. Lead gen, lead conversion, and then retention and referrals. And so we're picking the various parts or tactics that we're going to use, and we're assembling that engine.
What do you mean by retention? Like, you know, that's like we've taken a customer on, and is it retention tactics? Is like, okay, you need to sell them this or make them more sticky. Is that
exactly? So it's what are we doing to retain clients? So part of the biggest thing driving retention is, you know, one, doing great work, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Doing great work and doing what you say you're going to do. But what else are you doing within your process to help retain clients? How are you communicating with clients once they sign on and they become a client? So for example, a lot of MSPs do quarterly business reviews.
Mm-hmm.
Great practice, right? That is a retention practice, right? It is helping you stay in front of the client. It's helping you, it's giving you an opportunity to communicate your value and show them what you're doing, right? Because a lot of times with the work that MSPs are doing, if you're doing a great job and their system is stable, their infrastructure is stable, and they don't have a lot of support tickets, like they don't see you.
Yeah.
They don't see what you're doing. And QBRs are a great opportunity to go, hey, this is what's been going on in the back end that you don't see.
Mm-hmm.
This is what we've been doing, right?
Yeah.
You know, and that's also an opportunity to talk about, hey, what do we see coming down the pipe? What's happening with your business? And become not just a vendor, but a strategic partner, right? You're helping them plan what their IT needs are going to be as their business evolves, right? So QBR is a perfect example of a retention tactic.
Yeah, there's whole methodologies, tool set, services around the QBR piece. How do you, can you give me an example of how you've helped an MSP with their retention?
Well, QBR is a great example. I'm always looking at that.
Okay.
Are you having consistent meetings, right? What are there other things that you're doing? How are you communicating with your clients on the back end, and how regularly are you communicating with them?
Okay.
Oftentimes there are opportunities to communicate within the customer journey that MSPs may not be taking advantage of, right? So, you know, for example, you just finished a support ticket, right? That's a great opportunity to just continue the communication there, right? You could potentially ask for a referral there. You could ask for a testimonial. You could say, hey, we just solved this. What did you love about this process? What could we have done better? Right? That makes them feel good, right? It makes the client feel comfortable that, like, hey, they're asking me, hey, what went well? What didn't? Because they want to continue to support me better, right? That makes people feel good, right? How are you responding, right, when there are problems? That's another thing that we need to look at with retention, right?
Yeah.
Are you responding quickly? Are you responding in a way that the client wants to be responded to?
Mm-hmm.
Support tickets are a great way to shine, and it's a great way to freaking crash and burn.
But that's a balancing act.
It is a balancing act, and you know, you're never done optimizing that process. But how many times have we personally, you know, bought from somebody and then you run into a problem and it's crickets? Like you already bought, and so they don't give a crap about you anymore. And like, that makes you feel like crap.
Yeah.
And it makes you feel frustrated. you know, and so within MSPs businesses, man, that's happening daily, multiple times a day, depending on how large you are and how many support tickets you have. So looking at that process and ensuring that it's where it needs to be is a really important part of retention, you know? So now with what I do, you know, it's not like I'm not getting in and necessarily helping them with their support ticket process, but I'm bringing visibility to, hey, are there gaps here? And if there are gaps, let's connect you with somebody that can help you with that, right? Do you need to outsource your help desk, you know, or do you need to do it internally? Well, you know, we've got resources that we can connect you with to make sure that we're addressing that. Because although it's not something that we typically think about from a marketing perspective, it impacts retention and referrals. Yeah. So we need to, from a strategic standpoint, we need to bring visibility to that so that we can address it.
Yeah. Cool. I love that. And then, so that's the planning.
Yeah.
Then we've got leadership. And this, my understanding, this is more tactical, you said. Is that?
Well, I wouldn't say it's more tactical.
Who's doing it? It's who's being the fuel man. I mean,
you've got to think of the mechanic is overseeing the engine, right? They're making sure the engine's running effectively.
Okay.
So there are three parts to leadership. There are metrics, there's implementation and execution, and then there's optimization. So as a marketing leader, you need to oversee those three things. It doesn't mean that you need to be doing every part of that, but you need to be overseeing it. So metrics, and you know, MSPs appreciate the metric side of it because they're data-driven people, right? We have to identify what metrics we're going to track with our marketing. Otherwise, we have no idea what the hell's working and what's not.
And what would you say are crucial, like KPIs, metrics?
Great question. So
let's be looking up
there, and we can go down. You can go down, a rabbit hole here with metrics because there are so many metrics with marketing.
Yeah, there are.
But here's the top three, in my opinion, no matter what you're doing from a marketing standpoint, top three. Leads, how many leads are you generating? Lead source, where are the leads coming from?
Yes, we
understand where they're coming from. We know what activities are actually driving leads. And then new clients. When we know how many leads we're generating and how many new clients we got, that tells us what our conversion is like.
Mm-hmm.
Really powerful. So those three metrics are the easiest place to start. If you're not tracking any metrics, start tracking those metrics for your business as a whole.
Okay.
Right? Now, you can track those metrics granularly by campaign or marketing activity, right? So like we're doing Facebook ads. How many leads is it generating? How many of those are converting to clients, right? You can get that granular, but a lot of MSPs aren't even tracking any metrics. So you know, we need to walk before we run. Start with those three, and then you can start to expand from there. And from there, I think lifetime value of a client is very important.
It is.
And I think your cost to acquire a client is important. With lifetime value, MSPs tend to have very high lifetime value because they're expensive.
Most of them aren't aware of what the LTV is. I was having this conversation yesterday. I'm like, I don't want to tell you what the lifetime value of your client is. I want you to go and figure that out by yourself. But when you realize that number, the whole marketing game completely changes.
It's very important because, and by the way, lifetime value, we need to understand, I like to look at gross profit, not top line revenue. Some people get top line revenue. I like to look at gross profit because that's actually what's coming back into the business.
Okay.
So I like to look at gross profit for the lifetime you're retaining the client. So if, you know, let's just take, this is low, but let's just say your average retention is 1 year and your gross profit is $3,000 a month. That's $36,000 lifetime value of a client.
Mm-hmm.
That's low, but we're just using that for simplicity's sake. You know, for most MSPs, it's not uncommon to have 3, 4, 5 plus year retention or more.
much more. Yes.
So we need to look at what our average retention is, what our average gross profit is per month. That gives us the lifetime value. Because a lot of MSPs complain about, you know, hey, the cost per lead is higher, the cost to acquire a client is high. Well, your lifetime value is freaking high. So, you know, you may have to spend more than, you know, what it, your gross profit for the first month or the first 2 months or the first 3 months to acquire a client. But guess what? If you know the numbers, that's okay.
Exactly. It opens up a whole new reality. But I always feel biased, like going and telling them, because like, I'm like the marketing person that's like, you need to spend more on your marketing. They're like, well, why? Well, so look at lifetime value of your client, you know, it's just crazy. But once you understand that number, the whole cost per lead, you know, you can then start basically, you can almost start burning money because it's so crazy. Okay. The lifetime value of an MSP client.
So metrics are super important, but that's where I'd start. And yeah, you and I could probably talk about metrics on an episode by itself.
We'll get into this now. So, you know, okay, let's take in this example, the very conservative example, where it's $36,000 is going to be the top line revenue. How much should I be paying to acquire that type of customer?
Depends on what your, what your threshold is, right? For risk. You want to make sure that you are profitable, right? And so I always like to look at and shoot for 5 to 10x returns.
Okay.
Right. You can't always get that. And it depends on the marketing channel. But if you take that as a round number itself, 5 to 10x, can I get 5 to 10x? Let's shoot for that. But Scott, the reality is, if you're getting a 2x return, why would you stop doing it?
Yeah.
Right. If for every dollar I put in, I'm getting 2 back.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not going to stop doing that. I just want to make sure that I'm getting a return.
Okay.
Right.
Yeah. So yeah, I think that the lesson here for me, or something, the audience is like, go work out that lifetime value of the client and then come and have a conversation with Tim and myself.
Yeah. And look at it because, it also depends on how profitable you are, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Some MSPs are operating at higher levels of profit. And if you have a higher level of profit, you can afford to spend more on the front end.
Yeah.
Right. But I think the important takeaway here is, as an MSP, if you understand the lifetime value of a client, you're not going to freak out if you have to spend the first 2 to 3 months of profit for a client to acquire that client.
And you can then build up an amazing referral program as well. You know, I have some really cool incentive offers for referrals.
Yep.
So
which goes to, we could talk about this for a while. We need to think long-term. We can't think short-term with our marketing. If we think short-term, we try stuff and then we give up too early and we're like, it never worked. We have to think long-term. Have to. It's absolutely essential. And so if you think longer term and you're like, yeah, okay, so my first 3 months of profit I gave away, but I got 5 years of retention.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Who cares?
And I'll tell you who has these numbers figured out. A lot of these bigger sort of private equity firms, they're going around buying MSPs. Yep. And buying their clients. So it's like they have these numbers down to a T. So that's who you're up against. They have that reality on their Excel spreadsheet. So you need to have that same reality to compete in the space now. Speak to a Canadian MSP yesterday. And he's telling me that a number of his clients are being acquired from PE equity firms, private equity firms, but also MSPs, local area, they're just going around acquiring the MSPs and, you know, because they have this understanding of the lifetime value of a client and how much they're prepared to pay to get that, you know, that client. It's essential now. All right. Covered all three areas now, Tim. Is that correct?
Yeah, we talked about metrics, but then we have implementation and execution and optimization. So
okay.
With implementation and execution, the really important thing is, like, you can't do it all yourself. So you're going to have to find people to help implement and execute. And with marketing, it is too broad. So one of the big mistakes I see MSPs making is they hire internally and they expect that person to be a unicorn. You know, yeah. You're going to do my paid ads. You're going to do SEO. You're going to do email marketing. You're going to do social. Like, they may be able to do some of that, but they're
three or four full-time jobs right there.
Yeah. And they're not going to be great at it.
For all of these.
Yeah. They're not going to be great at it. And so we need to make sure that we're hiring the right people to implement and execute. The other thing too, is from a leadership standpoint, you know, most MSPs, marketing is not their thing, and that's okay. You can still lead your marketing efforts as the owner, but you have to have support and guidance there from somebody who can help advise you so that you're leveling up your marketing leadership skills and you avoid some of these common missteps, because these missteps can be expensive. Like, if you hire an internal person and you're not leveraging them, you know, you're blowing 50 to 70 grand a year.
Like, so how effective is it? Yeah.
Yeah. You know, and then with optimization, it's just, we're never done optimizing. Once you put a plan in place, it's not like you're done. You're constantly testing and tweaking your marketing, because a lot of marketing doesn't work.
Yeah.
Most marketers won't say that, but it's true. What we're doing is we're taking everything that we have, and based on our plan and past experience, we're putting things out there and we're testing it. And as we get data back, we optimize. The thing is, and you know this, Scott, from paid ads, all the paid ads that don't work help you get to the ad that works, and the ad that works makes it all worth it. Because your return on that one ad just kills it. And it's no different than any other marketing channel. So that's what we're doing with optimization. Okay. It's just constantly fine-tuning what's working, what's not, and just pulling different levers to get that engine running as optimally as possible.
Cool. Love it. So you're spot on there with testing what's working. And, you know, from our own business, we've been down this route because things change over time. We go back to the algorithm changes or platforms that just get wiped out. But testing is crucial, especially when the algorithms are changing so quickly. So if I go back 5 or 6 years now from today, like, I was doing videos on LinkedIn. They were working amazingly well, similar like Facebook Lives. Now everybody's doing them. And guess what? They don't really work anymore because everyone's doing them. Optimization is crucial. Awesome. So all of these three sort of higher level areas that we've discussed, where do you see most MSPs going wrong?
Yeah, I touched on this earlier. The biggest mistake is jumping right to the tactics without spending time on strategy. And I know why MSPs are not alone in this boat. Like, tactics are very tangible, right? They're much easier to understand. Oh, I'm putting an ad out on Facebook, or I'm putting a post out on social. Very tangible. Strategy tends to be a little bit more esoteric and kind of up in the clouds. And it can take time, right? It takes time to work through that. Again, going back to short-term versus long-term thinking. But when we focus on strategy first, what we're doing is we're taking time now so that we can move faster later.
Okay.
Because when you jump into tactics immediately without having the proper fuel for the engine, you feel like you're moving faster, but guess what? You freaking hit a wall and you stop. And then you got to figure it out. So you're really not further down the road. You just wasted time and money. And then you got to go back to doing the strategy. So there are a number of mistakes I see MSPs make with marketing, but that, in my opinion, with what I do, is the biggest mistake.
I love that. And I'll touch on this. Most MSPs that you'll speak to, if they're like really proud of what they offer, they'll say that they have documentation, so their clients' infrastructures are documented. Should an MFP be documenting their marketing strategy?
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah,
they absolutely should.
Okay.
You know, because, well, again, this goes back to like tracking. Like, you don't, if you're throwing stuff up against a wall, hoping it sticks, like, you know, hope is not a marketing strategy. So we need to have within planning, and this tends to resonate pretty well with a lot of MSPs, especially those that are familiar with, you know, the entrepreneurial operating system. Mm-hmm. With marketing planning, I look at it in 90-day sprints.
Okay, like every quarter, yeah.
Yeah, every quarter. Because, you know, the pandemic's a perfect example, Scott. If you had a year-long marketing plan in February, March, when the pandemic started, man, you might as well have stuck that into a drawer or threw it into a fire. Like, everything went out the window. Longer marketing plans become very complex, and complexity is in the way of implementation.
Yeah.
And no marketing plan is the same after the first 90 days. So if it's not the same, why take the, right? You want to know where your longer-term goals are and objectives are, but focus on what do we need to focus on in the next 90 days that's going to help us get one step closer.
Yeah.
So I love 90-day plans because it keeps things simple. You outline what your priorities are and you focus on those priorities. And when you know what your priorities are, it helps you eliminate the distraction. Because there's so much distraction in marketing. Look, today, tomorrow, you're going to have something come across your feed going, you got to do this. You got to do that.
Yeah.
And if you don't have a plan with your priorities in place, it's very easy to be like a squirrel chasing a nut and just go down that path.
There's also like, you know, there's, yeah, all these things change in marketing, but there's also from an MSP's perspective, all of these technologies are changing constantly, especially the age of AI, Microsoft Copilot, and what's coming up with the woodwork from Microsoft. What 10 apps have Microsoft released this month that our clients are clicking on? So,
yeah.
So I totally love that, you know, 90-day approach. All right. Final sort of question here then, Tim. Quick win marketing opportunities for MSPs. What are some common ones that you're aware of?
Yeah. So, There's plenty of them.
Okay.
One of the first places I look at is what's already working.
Yeah.
Like why go into a new channel if you haven't fully optimized what's already working? So we touched on this earlier, Scott. A lot of MSPs generating most of their business from referral. If you do not have a referral system in place where you're like, how are we going to ask? When are we going to ask?
Mm-hmm.
That's low-hanging fruit.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So, you know, so look at that.
Do more of what's already working. Yeah.
Do more of what's already working and do it better. Optimize it. Fill gaps that you have. That's the first place that we look. Another one that's related to that is what used to work that you stopped doing.
Yeah.
Right. So, you know,
it's difficult to figure out though.
It can be. A lot of people don't think about it, but like, yeah. I used to do a lot of in-person speaking before the pandemic.
Yeah.
And I stopped, right? It worked. You know, that's a perfect example. Like, should I start doing that again, right? Those are opportunities for us to look at there. You know, the other area where there are some opportunities specifically in the MSP space is with co-op and MDF funds.
Oh, yeah. I've heard of that.
You know, A lot of MSPs have marketing development funds or co-op funds from their vendors that they're not taking advantage of, or they may not be fully aware of it.
Yeah, they're just not aware of it at all. Yeah.
Yeah. And so that's another place to look at that's really common in the MSP space where it's like, man, you may have money that's just sitting out there that you can use towards your marketing that doesn't need to come out of your pocket.
It's not getting spent. Yeah. Yeah. That is such a big one that I miss this quite often. Is like, you know, asking the MSP, is it okay, give me a list of your vendors. Which ones have a, you know, marketing, it's a marketing development fund, MDF, isn't it?
Yes. Marketing development funds is typically what they call it. MDF or COA.
Okay.
You know, and you know, asking your vendors about that. You know, that is low hanging fruit, because that's money that you can spend on your marketing efforts that is not going to come out of your pocket.
I love that. Yeah. Okay. These are great tips, then. How can people reach out to you? How can we get in contact with you if you want to hear more?
Yeah, cool. I appreciate that. Two ways. Go to our website, rialtomarketing.com. So that's R-I-A-L-T-O marketing.com. The other tool that I've got that some of your MSPs might want to take advantage of is that revenueroadblockscorecard.com.
Okay.
Revenueroadblockscorecard.com. So if they go there, we touched on 9 key elements of the marketing engine. Mm-hmm. If they want to know which of those are slowing down their growth, that's where they can go to do it.
Oh, this
you'll
is like
fill in your information. Yep. You'll get a customized report. So it's super simple, less than 5 minutes. So take advantage of that.
You have to put that URL in the chat for me. We'll put that in the show notes.
Cool.
Okay.
Awesome.
Do we want to cover anything else for the audience? We've covered like a lot in the last like 50 minutes here. But,
yeah. We covered a lot. The only thing I would say is if this resonated with you, just listen to it multiple times, because you won't digest everything that we covered. But we did cover a lot of ground. And, you know, it's if you want to build a consistent, repeatable business, you have to have a marketing engine. And we covered all the main